Quite warm in Waterford and the southeast today. 20, 21, 22, possibly 24 degrees. Humidity is at 92%. Yes, that's the weather forecast. Rather benign for today. Here's the weather forecast, though, for this day in September 2051. Well, our 8-month summer keeps on giving. Temperatures 32 degrees, down from the high 30s of the last week. UV index is at 8. Red alert mosquito warnings continue at Rathgormack. Air moisture 92%. High potato blight warnings. And 3 inches of rain expected tonight, with normal flooding in Dungarvan and Blenheim. And our refugee alert, sponsored by Blade Runner Security, puts where Woodstown once was on status extreme. Now, there you go. Scary, isn't it? It's not fiction, though. It's scientific predictions by the Irish Centre for High-End Computing, the supercomputer based at WIT, known as K.
We have no money to pay for a kilo of rice. We just want to live. We want to be safe. We just want to eat. We want to drink.
And at least 1.2 billion people, yes, billion, will be trying to cross oceans and land, displaced from their homes, climate refugees on a planet with 60% less fresh water than today and demands for food 50% higher, say the Institute for Economics and Peace. We're going to be looking at many matters today, especially water and what we can do about it. And we won't even have time to talk about the many parts of our coast that will be underwater in 30 years' time if something serious isn't done. Some listening now won't be around in 30 years' time. Should we care? I'll be 81 if I'm still alive. Why should I care?
What kind of environment am I going to live in now in 20 years' time? The people like kind of making the decisions and stuff have the ability to put it on the long finger because they know that they're not really going to have to deal with the consequences, you know?
Sean's in his early 20s. He doesn't know if he wants to bring children into this world.
Would you have doubts about having children?
Seriously, yeah, for sure. I don't know if people realise, but that's a common conversation amongst people my age. Like, is it realistic to have kids? Like, if you're going to have kids, are you damning them to a future in which they're going to struggle massively in terms of, like, climate change and climate refugees and even, like, the economic side of that, the economic repercussions of that standard of living? You know, is it something I can stand by, a decision I can stand over to have kids and know that they're probably going to grow up and they're going to ask me that question in terms of, like, you know, why did you have kids knowing that this is going to be the reality of the situation? Like,
oh my goodness. More from Sean later. Now imagine you're a radio producer in 2051 doing a history programme on what people were saying in 2021, listening to this. Well, hello there from the past. Here's a sample of what's been happening this year.
Glaciers are melting.
The water has receded now, but has left much of the area in ruins.
Weather is what we experience every day.
The devastation and the death. Severe flooding across Europe kills at least 60 people.
The atmosphere and oceans are warmer.
It's a catastrophe.
So, the road to 2051 is probably flooded, tarmac cracked from heat, strewn with storm debris. The journey I undertook in making this programme, it's flooded me with emotions. Like many of you listening, I'm afraid to even think of what the future might be like. I feel helpless when I see reports of icebergs melting. I try to believe it's nothing to do with me. Kind of makes me anxious. And in researching this programme, I found out that feeling is actually called climate anxiety. What, I ask you, does this mean? Who do I talk to? Who do I talk about it? I went first to Tammy Darcy. She's an award-winning social entrepreneur and founder of the Shona Project. She helps people understand in general, what is anxiety? We're here in the beautiful People's Park. There's people sitting out having their lunch.
It's a lovely day, yeah.
This is a million miles away from icebergs melting.
Yes, but they're closer than we think. So you look at how warm it is today, getting warmer, and so many of us are saying, isn't it great that it's getting hotter and hotter, but not really realising that it is very real and it is affecting all of us, no matter where we are.
You're not a climate expert, you don't claim to be, but you have dealt with a lot of people, particularly young women, dealing with anxiety issues. How would you define climate anxiety? Is there such a thing as climate anxiety?
There definitely is such a thing as climate anxiety, but what I think is really tough on this generation of young people is that our generation don't really understand how they feel, and a lot of the time we don't listen to them, and if we do listen to them, we maybe don't know how to help them. We don't have that experience. It's so much closer to their generation than it is to ours. Like, I've heard of little kids as young as like 8 or 9 being afraid to leave the tap running while they're brushing their teeth because they're frightened that they're using up water that's eventually going to run out. So the really young ones don't really understand it, but they just feel that fear. And then the worst thing any of us can feel when we're stressed, which is helpless. So I think our generation need to listen up a little bit more to them.
Yes, we've spoken about climate anxiety, but let's get down to the basics. What's all the hullabaloo about carbon, or more specifically, carbon dioxide? I'm not really a big science nerd. When I hear about carbon footprint, my mind heads off to Frilliana. As Aina said a few minutes ago, the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has more than doubled from 1970, when I was born, to 2016. I'm not to blame for it all. 90% came from burning fossil fuels, 90% of that increase, and 10% from changes in land use. Aina, explain, please, the science behind this to a thicko like myself.
Well, carbonisation and climate, carbon neutral, all of these words are bandied about. And really, what they all stem from is the fact that in our atmosphere, as well as having oxygen for us to breathe and nitrogen, which takes up most of the space, we have carbon dioxide in the air as well. And that's CO2. That's one molecule of carbon joined up to two molecules of oxygen. But we wouldn't have life on Earth without it, because what it does is it actually retains a certain amount of heat on Earth. The sunshine sends out heat from its heat rays. They come down through the atmosphere, they hit the Earth, and they're reflected back into space. And this reflection is stopped by carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Now, if the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was 100%, then we would have all the heat retained and we'd all melt. If we had none, it would all go and we'd all freeze. So, you know, that's where it is. So that's where this carbonisation comes from.
OK, that seems clear enough, Aina. Thanks. We'll come back to you in a while. We're going to have various contributors as well throughout the programme. And I want to ask you, have you been ever to the Anne Valley Walk in Dunhill? Did you know that you're in a world-leading initiative, the Dunhill Integrated Constructed Wetlands? I'm about to talk to James O'Toole, one of the top guys in Irish Water's asset operations.
So I'm an ecologist.
Oh, okay.
So I'm the lead ecologist in Irish Water. My background is in ecology. When you're putting in large infrastructure projects, you have to determine what's the environmental impact, what's the ecological impact in advance of putting in those projects. So as part of the planning process for any local authority or on board Panola, we'd go along, do our environmental assessments and our ecological assessments and determine, before you start any construction, these are the potential impacts and these are the mitigation measures you put in to avoid and reduce those impacts. We're looking at ways of, instead of putting in traditional engineering, wastewater works, water treatment plants, can we use nature-based solutions?
We're looking at here, how tall are those reeds? 10 feet, they're big.
3 to 4 metres.
3 to 4 metres, yeah, so at least 10 feet tall. Yeah. So you can hear them gently swaying in the breezes there. If I walk in towards it, I'd say it falls off fairly quickly there. But yeah. What are these?
This is Typha domigensis. Which is your bulrush.
Oh, yeah.
Coming on.
I'm great at the old Latin.
This is a great example where wetlands, people don't realise, wetlands are actually nature's own way of cleaning water systems, because you'll have all sorts of pollutants coming in from the whole overall catchment. And when it goes through a wetland, the water gets slowed down, and then between the different macrophytes, as we see here, the bulrush, then you have all sorts of biofilm, microorganisms at the base, and they all work along it, taking up the nutrients, taking out the pollutants. And that's what wetlands naturally do, is they clean water and then before it goes back into the Anne River. This particular integrated constructed wetland, ICW, treats all the wastewater from Dunhill Village. So instead of a conventional engineering wastewater treatment plant, we're using a series of these ponds. So all the effluent wastewater coming from the village comes down, enters a series of ponds. And then as it goes from pond to pond, it gets cleaner and cleaner and cleaner before it's released back into the environment.
Can this be replicated on a bigger scale? Like Dunhill is a small village.
Yeah, it can, but it's important. It's the amount of land it takes up. We can certainly do it on a larger scale if you have enough land.
Some people would say, not really worth doing it. Why worth the hassle? We're never going to be exporting water. They see this disconnect between different sections of society and different companies and different state bodies.
That's true. But I think what we're seeing, particularly in the last couple of years, companies in particular are seeing the bigger picture. We can't just sit back and kind of go, I can't do anything personally, so I'll let somebody else do it. We can all do our own things, even at home.
Yeah.
We can recycle better. We can use less water. If you want to make an impact to get the adults to change, educate the kids, because the kids go home and tell their parents.
What's happening in schools? Not enough, in my opinion. One school where a teacher is blazing the trail is Ardscull na Mar an Tramore. There's a chap there, his name is Patrick Kerwin. He sometimes wears a cloth peaked cap like Michael Healy Ray style, but he's a complete opposite of the Kerry politician. Here's Patrick.
Devastation is kind of on the horizon, but it's not an absolute and utter certainty. We do have a choice about the direction that we want to go in.
Mr. Kerwin talking to some of the pupils. I asked the pupils for their thoughts.
Amber Morn, I'd definitely be worried about it. Like, it's something I definitely think about whenever, you know, I'm thinking about what I want to do when I'm older.
Niamh Purcell. I think that we think we have the right to do this, but we really don't. And if people don't wake up and realise that if we don't stop, there will be absolutely nothing left.
Do we get it as adults?
I think some people do. It depends how you were brought up as well and how your parents thought about it. But I think in this day and age, kids are a lot more understanding and educated than what the previous generation was about what's actually happening.
Matthew Murray. I feel like it's really swept under the carpet a bit at the moment and not really enough doing in schools and stuff. Weird ones are like going to have to deal with this problem.
Like, we're looking out on Tramore Strand. It's all peaceful. It's all quiet. It looks lovely. What's this got to do with icebergs melting and what Patrick is saying, what your teacher is saying?
Well, it's kind of like the knock-on effect. You know, it might not seem now that there might be a problem with icebergs melting, but like over time, you know, the sea levels might rise.
Tess Hartley. For years we've been saying people don't care because it's not affecting them, but now that it is affecting them, they're still saying, oh, it doesn't matter. And you think that with all like social media, everything, the way things spread around the world, that people would start to care. So like, it's not even that people don't care because it's not happening right now. It's just that they know that if they were to start caring, it would just give them so much anxiety and so much would happen. And especially with everything like the pandemic, everything, like everyone uses the excuse that there's already so much happening. How could they care about something else?
Food, glorious food. We're anxious to try it.
Three banquets a day, our favorite diet.
Just picture a mammoth steak, fried, roasted, or stewed.
Yes, a twist on the Oliver version for Ice Age 2. But what about food? Where do you source your food? I've been talking to Mick Kelly from GIY and also those in Ballybeg Greens.
So we're doing a bit of weeding there. Who have we got here?
Ray Power, Social Enterprise Manager here at Parade FRC.
I'm Bernadette Kervick. I'm the head grower and also a teacher.
Well, we grow in 7 tunnels here in Ballybeg. Everything we grow as nature would have it. There are no additives, no sprays, no anything.
The smells in here are just lovely. Oh my God, what have we got here, Bernadette? A quick run through,
here
quickly.
We have Swiss chard and we also have...
Swiss what?
Swiss chard.
What's that?
And it's a delicious...
I wasn't reared on that.
It's a delicious vegetable, but aesthetically it looks beautiful as well because it's all its array of colours.
Can what you're doing here be replicated on a bigger scale? Why is this important here in a working class area like Ballybeg?
Well, obviously, the environment and the problems that we are encountering on the large scale with our beautiful planet, they are fixable. You can do something about it, and it doesn't have to. You don't have to leave it to the politicians. You don't have to leave it to the environmentalists. You can start at home. There are
9 million bicycles. Whatever about getting on your bike? What about getting into your car? Is it madness promoting electric vehicles if we don't have enough charging points around the county and city and across the country? Fergus Galvin is still with me, Director of Services of Waterford Council. Fergus, the council obviously has a major role in implementation and rollout of electric charging points across the county. What's the situation?
There's probably something in the region of about 30 public chargers in the city and county at this stage.
Very low.
Oh, it's quite low, yeah. There is a need to particularly, I suppose, to roll those out into some of the more rural areas, into the smaller towns and villages where the penetration at the moment is very, very low.
Shane and his partner live in Lower Newtown and Waterford City. They're both in their late 20s, professionals, and they've just moved into a new house and they've built a carport out the back.
Shane, what are we looking at here? We've got a shed, an open kind of a shed in front of us, one section closed in, and then you've got your... What is this car?
It's a Renault Zoe. I got it in February, and it's a fully electric car, so it's not even a hybrid. It's just, I took the full dive and I went fully electric.
And talk to me about the shed, the roof on the shed.
We had an old shed, and we decided to build a carport over it. And on the carport, there's a couple of solar panels. So we've what's called a 4 kilowatt system, which generates a peak sunlight hours, 4 kilowatts of energy.
The new roof is effectively completely solar.
All the solar panels are up there, and there's a wire coming from all the solar panels at the back going into the shed.
You've got this in, what, around 2.5, 3 months ago?
About that, yeah.
How's it been?
It's been great. It's been great. I'm a gadget guy. You know, I love seeing, you know, where electricity is coming from and to, and how it's all been controlled. So I've really enjoyed it. And my electric car has been using it as well, so...
Ah, the bicycle. What about bicycle lanes in your area in Dungarvan, Tramore, wherever the case may be? I had a quick spin out the other morning, Monday morning, in school traffic, you could say, to try and see what bicycle lanes are out there. Oh my goodness. So I'm heading off to just see what the cycle lanes are like around the Williamstown Road area, Dunmore Road area, heading in towards town on Monday morning. Schools are back. See how dangerous it is. So I'm out here on the Williamstown Road, cycling on the grass verge. There's absolutely no cycle lane here. Traffic is bumper to bumper. Oh, geez. This is ridiculous. So I've come onto the Dunmore Road, and no cycle lanes. Up past Collins's Avenue, difficult getting round roundabouts. Haven't seen one child cycling to school. Only saw two cyclists in total for a population of 15,000-18,000. That's very bad. Burgess Galvin, Director of Services at Waterford Council. What about trying to cycle on the Dunmore Road in the morning as an adult, or trying to encourage your children to do it? You're taking your life into your hands.
Absolutely, And
but what about, like, there's 10, 15,000 people living around this area here.
This is a very complex area. I mean, you have, as you said, probably between 15 and 18,000 people living in the greater Dunmore Road, Williamstown Road area. A lot of those people want to get up in the morning and bring their kids to school down in Newtown or De La Salle or wherever, or to go to work in the city centre. You have the influence of the hospital beside us here in terms of the 2,000 or so staff and God knows how many patients and visitors that go in out every day of the week. There are huge, huge pressures on the Dunmore Road.
Let's go briefly to a couple of things that people believe can and should be done. I'll start with Tammy Darcy.
Encouraging them to feel that they're empowered to make a change, encouraging their schools to educate them on how they can make a change, and getting them involved in things that are going on, whether it's, you know, in recycling or how they shop, or, you know, this movement towards repurposing clothes and being aware of fast fashion and all of those things. So no matter what their concern is, there's ways for them to get active in that area, and we should be encouraging and supporting that.
Aina and Ilona, what needs to be done?
Well, copping on for a start, instead of going around whinging saying we're all right, because we live in the middle between the North Pole and the equator. And whenever we begin to really feel the effects of climate change, other places will have completely become uninhabitable.
Sean Darcy, who's in his 20s, this is what he thinks needs to be done.
I try and understand the reality of it, understand the reality of the situation, the gravity of it. And that is, you know, does inspire a bit of despair and depression and whatever. But also you need to take the mantle, like you need to grab the bull by the horns in terms of, like, what can I actually do? Like, you know, what can we do moving forward? And, like, there definitely is things we can do. And, like, the people that are doing work are, like, fabulous people, really inspiring. And, like, you know, they deserve all the credit in the world as well. Climate change, like, you know, our earth is being made principally inhospitable in the pursuit of profits.
In the pursuit of profits. In a minute, you might be looking at your radio wondering why has it gone silent. So where does it leave us? I suppose what I've learned on this little journey is that only us humans could really have screwed up an entire planetary system the way we have. In making this programme, I haven't included any politicians because, in my opinion, none of them are doing enough. Not just them. We're not doing enough. And making this programme, I say, it's been a kind of a journey for me. I'm actually sorry I decided to do it, as I've been lying awake until 3 o'clock most nights in the past week thinking of what to say, thinking about climate change and kind of worrying. But you've heard a lot. There is hope. We've heard just a fraction of what needs to be done. Thanks to producer Jennifer and all here at WNR. And let's get doing. So to the radio producer in 2051 listening to this, hope you're proud of this generation. Hope you made a difference. Did we do enough? And if we haven't done enough, then the sound of maybe my children's children playing in the afternoon sun will be replaced with silence. So here's 10 seconds from the future of those very children playing in the afternoon sun. Goodbye. Good luck. We're going to need it.